Now stay tuned for To Your Health, where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall, and by Rebecca's Natural Foods in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. And now, here are your hosts, Mike McBee and nurse practitioner Melanie Dorian.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. This is your host, Mike McBee. I'm with my co-host, nurse practitioner Melanie Dorian. How are you, Melanie?
Good morning, Mike. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Oh, always good to do great. No doubt. Staying healthy, I'm sure, right?
Trying to.
Trying to. Yeah, absolutely. Trying to. Well, we have a special guest. We have Dr. David Zioli. He is a naturopathic doctor, so he has an ND after his name. And how are you, doctor?
I'm doing great. Hi, Mike. Good morning,
that's
Melanie.
That's excellent. Yeah.
Good morning.
Well, now, he is a colleague of Melanie's. So, Melanie? Take it away.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mike. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Zioli. And for our listeners, Dr. Zioli is a naturopathic doctor, and he will explain to us what that is. And he graduated from the National College of Natural Medicine in Portland. And he's also had advanced training in Oriental medicine, integrates acupuncture in his practice, in addition to all of the amazing tools that naturopaths include. And I've had the privilege to collaborate with Dr. Zioli now for a couple of years, and he's really been critical in problem solving some tougher cases in my patients. So I've really appreciated collaborating with Dr. Zioli, and certainly have learned a lot. So thank you, Dr. Zioli, for joining us.
Yes, my pleasure. Good to be here. So,
why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and then a little bit of what naturopathic medicine is for our listeners who may not know what naturopathic medicine is.
Sure. Yeah. Originally, I was planning on being a medical doctor, MD, and I actually went for an interview at the medical school. I was in Portland, Oregon. The doctor interviewing me at the medical school, MD medical school, he said that I'd be a great surgeon. I have a background as a mechanic. My dad was a mechanic, and he thought I'd be a great surgeon because he said people are like cars. You replace parts, and that's how you heal people. That's what you do for medicine. So it really made me think what a doctor is in our society. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized mainstream medicine is about surgery and drugs and not necessarily about other things. Mm. So at that time in Portland, Oregon, there were many other schools. There's osteopathic school, naturopathic, chiropractic, acupuncture. So I explored all the different possibilities. And what attracted me to naturopathic medicine was the philosophy. Part of that philosophy is, of course, doing natural things, doing no harm, and using the healing powers of nature, but also trying to find the underlying causes of symptoms, what's causing it. So that really made me think about what causes health, what causes disease. And a lot of times it just comes back to the basics, diet and lifestyle, and doing things to keep healthy in those ways.
That's great. And you've been in practice in Charlottesville for how long now?
Been here for over 5 years.
Over 5 years. Great. Tell us some of the conditions that you focus on. I know you do a lot of things, but we all as practitioners have certain areas of strengths and our focus. So tell us a couple of the areas of focus that you have in your practice and maybe how, in a quick snapshot, how you would go about them.
Sure. Yeah, of course. We always try to help people build a foundation in health. And a lot of that revolves around the digestion and the stomach. So we deal a lot with different kinds of digestive issues with people. And there are many things that can go wrong with the gut. So we try to find out exactly what's going on and find the best way to correct that. So that's one area, the digestive system. Also, we deal a lot with pain management. Since I do acupuncture and oriental medicine, it's very helpful for any kind of pain, back pain, headaches, migraines, you name it. Acupuncture seems to do a great job at relieving acute and chronic pain conditions without medications even.
That's really good. And that's one area, the digestive health, that you've definitely helped my patients and I on. And I might pick your brain a little bit on that also, because we talk so much, Mike and I, on the station, on To Your Health, about the importance of the microbiome and the digestive health and food first as medicine. But one of the areas that a lot of people, I think, needs to be demystified, and this is where I feel naturopathic physicians shine, is understanding the consequences of having low or suboptimal levels of stomach acid. And I know I've sent you many patients for testing for that, and yeah, that's been really important, actually. in many of my patients to identify actual root cause of their symptoms. So tell our listeners a little bit more about what can happen when levels of stomach acid are low or suboptimal, and how that can also mimic indigestion or high levels of stomach acid, and how you would approach that, because I think it's really misunderstood, misunderstood in the US.
That's a great question. So Dr. Jonathan Wright wrote a book, Why Stomach Acid is Good for You. So there's a lot of things that stomach acid does in the body. And I could list a whole bunch of things, but to make it brief, it definitely helps to digest the food and helps to allow absorption of minerals and proteins and amino acids. So the stomach acid is crucial for all those things. It also kills microorganisms. It does so many things for us. And the first thing we try to do if there's a problem in the stomach is turn that off. And that's not necessarily the best approach, especially if you don't know if the stomach acid is low or high, because a low stomach acid condition can also cause symptoms of a reflux or indigestion or constipation. And sometimes it's hard to determine if symptoms are caused from low stomach acid or high stomach acid.
You're listening to Your Health on 97.9 The Wren, and we are talking with Dr. David Zioli about digestive health.
Okay, we want to emphasize that a little bit, because I think that's an area of confusion for a lot of our patients and a lot of our listeners. So low stomach acid can mimic the symptoms of indigestion or high stomach acid. Can you expand just a little bit on that so our listeners are really clear about this?
Yeah, let me tell you about that, because that's an important concept. The idea is that there's a valve on the top of the stomach called the lower esophageal sphincter. And that valve is acid sensitive. So when there's plenty of acid in the stomach, that valve is going to have a tendency to close. If the stomach acid is low, that valve is going to open. And then whatever acid's in the stomach is going to come up and burn the esophagus. So that's how low stomach acid can mimic high stomach acid, because that's the same symptom. Heartburn or reflux is a symptom. And that's caused from the acid touching the esophagus. The stomach itself, as you know, is protected from the acid. So there's many layers of mucus inside the stomach. So there's never really burning in the stomach. And when someone's having a reflux or a indigestion GERD, what's happening is the acid from the stomach is coming up into the esophagus and burning those sensitive tissues. And again, when the acid is low, that little doorway between the stomach and the esophagus opens, and then the acid comes up and burns the esophagus.
And then they're not sure if it's because of low or high stomach acid. So Dr. Zioli, how can we help our listeners possibly differentiate a little bit? I know it's complex, and typically, really, they should work with a healthcare practitioner trained in this, but possibly a couple of tips to our listeners, because a lot of our listeners probably do have indigestion. Yeah. Take Tums or take Prilosec or Pepcid and Rolaids and you name it. It's an epidemic, I feel, indigestion in our society. So maybe a couple of tips for our listeners.
It's a very common condition. And of course, if someone knows that there's a trigger for it, it's good to work with that to start with. You know, if you know that you get heartburn or reflux whenever you eat a particular food, whether it's tomato sauce or whatever it is, it's good to start with that, because people can usually get quick results. That's the quickest way to get results. If you know there's a trigger for your reflux and then you avoid that trigger, that's of course the easiest thing.
That's true. So avoid the trigger. That's a great one. And then it's important again to clarify. So, because I get that in my patients, they'll tell me, but of course I have high stomach acid because I take the Pepcid or I take the Rolaids or I take the Tums and then I feel better. But again, like Dr. Zioli said here to our listeners, the symptoms can be the same. The burning, the acid comes back up, and that symptom, that feeling of burning is the same, but it might be because you have low or suboptimal levels of stomach acid. And is there a way that you've seen, other than coming in and getting tested, which is really the best way of doing that, but any tips in your patients that you've seen helpful to help differentiate that?
Yeah, of course, the best way is to do the testing, and we can talk more about that later. But you could also do a trial of taking a little bit of stomach acid or vinegar. So vinegar is a similar pH to the stomach acid. Also, the top supplement at the vitamin store that helps with reflux is called betaine pepsin or betaine hydrochloride. It's a type of stomach acid made from beets. And some people take a trial of that, and if it helps them, then that's a good indication that their stomach acid is low rather than high.
Okay, that's a great tip. But they can also do it with just vinegar. Does any vinegar help with that?
Yeah, any kind of vinegar, apple cider vinegar or rice vinegar or any kind of vinegar you have. Maybe the balsamic vinegar is a little bit spicy for that kind of a test. Yeah, okay. Yeah. The fact that it's acidic is going to help if the stomach acid then is low.
If they start using the vinegar before a meal and they start feeling better or they start feeling less indigestion, that is a hint.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Why don't we jump right into the testing? Because that's one of the areas where you've been really instrumental is testing for levels of stomach acid. And it's a very interesting, AKA weird test. So yeah. when I explain it to my patients, they're always fascinated by it. It's so revealing. So many of the patients get tested. The level of dysfunction, the extent to which stomach acid secretion is dysfunctional. So why don't you explain the test that you use in your practice?
Yes, it's called the Heidelberg test. It was developed in Heidelberg, Germany. And this is a test for the strength of the stomach acid. It involves swallowing a little capsule, which has a pH meter and a radio transmitter. And when that capsule is in the stomach, it can transmit the pH level or the acid level to the computer. And you can see on the screen, it makes a graph and it tells you how much stomach acid you have. It gives a baseline. Everyone should have a baseline level of stomach acid. And then the next step in the test is to neutralize that. You take a little bit of baking soda to neutralize your stomach acid. And then you count how long it takes for your stomach to reacidify. And depending on how long that takes is an indication of the strength of your stomach acid production in the stomach.
And to do that, there's a probe, right? That patients swallow.
Yeah. It's a little pill and it just looks like a regular capsule pill. And that pill has a pH meter in it and a radio transmitter.
That's the coolest test ever. Seriously. When I first look into that. And when I realized that you did that in town, I was very excited. So again, to our listeners, Dr. Zioli here, a naturopathic physician here in Charlottesville, he is an expert on many topics, including digestive health, hormones, toxins, and we're talking right now, focusing on digestive health and the Heidelberg test, which is a very interesting test that's very important to help us determine the level of stomach acid secretion. And
absolutely.
Because the symptoms of high or low stomach acid are the same or can be the same in many patients.
That's some really good information. I just want to let everybody know they're listening to Your Health on Real Oldies 97.9 The Wren. I'm with my co-host Melanie Dorion, nurse practitioner, and Dr. David Zioli. He's a naturopathic doctor, and we were talking about digestion and digestive health. Doctor, I have a question for you. I do turmeric. I juice a lot of turmeric. And then I add lemons and limes and ginger and black pepper to, you know, get the curcumin stimulated so that it actually works. And I've noticed that if I take this, I also add apple cider vinegar to the juice. When I take it, a lot of times I'll get acid reflux. So what I've been doing is just taking it and then drinking water. And it seems to calm it down.
Yeah, of course, when you have a cocktail like that, sometimes it can be a little bit irritating to the tissues in the stomach, especially if there's apple cider vinegar in there. And yeah, if you're taking water and it's diluting it a little bit, maybe it's just a little bit strong for you.
Okay, but I know it definitely lessens the pain in my joints.
Oh yeah, it's a strong anti-inflammatory.
Turmeric is a powerful tool that, because I also study naturopathic medicine at Bastyr University, and it's a powerful tool in our herb series that we study quite a bit that's incorporated into a lot of our management protocols because it's really a spice, but it's so extensively studied and has been proven and shown scientifically to be so beneficial. Dr. Zioli, do you want to highlight a couple of the areas where you have found turmeric to be particularly helpful? Because it is a really important tool that our listeners could integrate today or tomorrow if wanted in their health plan.
Yeah, there's so much research. For every condition you can mention, there's some evidence that turmeric can be helpful. And of course, you know, joint pain is a big one. And digestive issues, and it's been used for so long. I think it's been used for just about everything you can imagine. Yeah, it's such a powerful tool. And some people just put it in their food. You know, Indian cuisine uses it as a spice, and it's almost like garlic in some other cultures to use a turmeric. So it doesn't hurt to put it in your food, or you can take it as a supplement, and there's many ways to take it too.
And Dr. Zioli, any other conditions? We focused here last couple of minutes on digestive health, but any other conditions that you like?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, another area that we work with is the hormones. So a lot of times the hormones are out of balance in people, and there's different ways to determine if that's an issue, and there are different ways you can address it. And that's a very important part of health is hormone health. So that's another thing that we work with at our clinic here.
Absolutely. And hormone health, a lot of people think hormones, they think, oh, the sex hormones, you know, the estrogens, progesterone, testosterone. But tell us a little bit more the wider spectrum.
Yeah, exactly. There's other hormones besides the sex hormones. There's insulin from the pancreas. There's the adrenal hormones. So those are some of the other ones that are very important that they get missed sometimes because, of course, the sex hormones are very important, but the other ones are very important too. And sometimes the symptoms of one type of hormonal imbalance will mimic a different condition with a different hormone. So it's really important to really determine which hormones are out of balance and why.
We're talking to Dr. David Zioli about digestive health, and we're really learning a lot. I hope you are too. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Your Health on 97.9 The Wren, brought to you by Rebecca's Natural Foods in the Barracks Road Shopping Center and by Hamilton's on the Downtown Mall, featuring sustainable fine dining on Charlottesville's Downtown Mall for over 20 years. Mike and Melanie will be right back.
Support for this station today is from Rebecca's Natural Food in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. During this COVID emergency, you can find out about Rebecca's daily hours, mail order options, and front of store pickup at 977-1965 or at rebeccasnaturalfoods.com. Rebecca stands with the community during this time of social distancing and is there to safely provide the nutritional support you need. That's Rebecca's Natural Food in the Barracks Road Shopping Center at 977-1965 or at rebeccasnaturalfoods.com. Support today is coming from Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of contemporary American fine dining on Charlottesville's historic downtown mall. At Hamilton's, you'll find a seafood, steaks, and vegetarian fare with a full bar and eclectic wine list. Hamilton's supports sustainability in food production, transportation, and preparation, and in the community at large. You can see the lunch and dinner menus, make a reservation, or book the private dining space for your function, all at hamiltonsrestaurant.com.
So let's just say that somebody is pre-diabetes and, you know, their insulin levels obviously are a little out of whack. How can that be corrected by diet?
Okay, yeah. So always, insulin production is in response to what's eaten every day. So as the blood sugar level goes up, so does the insulin level. So if someone has hyperinsulinemia or too much production of insulin, the assumption is there's something in the diet that's making that happen. Part of the issue is finding out what that particular food is. And that food may or may not be sugar. Interestingly enough, there are other foods that can raise the blood sugar that don't necessarily have a high glycemic index or don't necessarily taste sweet.
I know carbs will do it.
Yeah. Sometimes it's carbs, sometimes it's sugar. Sometimes if a person has a food sensitivity or a food allergy, that could raise the blood sugar too. So
yes,
I've seen, yeah.
That's a really good point. If you have a food that your body doesn't do well with, so yeah, you're sensitive, you may not be allergic to it. You might have a sensitivity for it, can raise inflammation and raise blood sugars as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you offer food sensitivity testing as well at your clinic, correct?
Yes, we do. Yeah, that's important too. Yeah, sensitivity is a little bit different than allergy, you're right. There's just some foods that people don't do well with. Not every person is built to digest every food that's available. Sometimes there's a food that just doesn't process well, it doesn't get digested, and then it can in turn create inflammation, which can cause a host of other issues.
Are there any foods that fall into that category?
Yeah, the most common ones I see come up on the testing are dairy, wheat, and eggs. Those are the top three.
That's also what I'm seeing in my testing. I tell people wheat or gluten, dairy, eggs. I also see a lot of people having issues with corn and soy, maybe not as much as the ones you just mentioned, but certainly those are the top five that I'm seeing. But yeah, I agree. I see those top three as well in my practice.
Well, it's interesting because Dr. Walls says in her protocol, pretty much eliminate dairy, eliminate wheat. She eliminates eggs, but that's because she has a specific sensitivity to them. But the dairy and the wheat is common in every one of her recommendations for diet.
We talk a lot, Dr. Zealy, about the Walls protocol, given the high levels of success rooted in naturopathic medicine. So the root of her protocol is from the naturopathic medicine philosophy, which is really fantastic. Let me ask you, during this COVID period, if you've seen anything different or any conditions increase in intensity or in frequency, and then your top tips for our listeners in terms of remaining healthy during COVID and during high levels of stress.
Sure. Yes, that's so important. Definitely, I've seen a lot more people with depression, and people that were depressed previously, it seems to have gotten worse with staying home and staying isolated. Yeah, it's important to recognize that people have an emotional aspect and a mental aspect, and we're social animals, and it is a big stress to have this kind of isolation and lockdown, but it's an opportunity too. It's an opportunity to find new ways to connect with the world and to connect with nature. So one simple thing I tell us to greet the sun every morning, go open a window or greet the sun, good morning sun, and put your feet, bare feet on the ground, take some fresh breaths. That's so empowering to recognize we have a relationship with all of nature. You know, we're still connected to everything else on the planet besides people, and we should take advantage of that while we have the opportunity.
Simple things. I totally agree.
Yeah.
I love that. Connecting with the sun, first thing in the morning, grounding, putting your feet on the ground without shoes or socks, tips. Any other tip for our listeners to stay healthy in times of stress and especially during COVID?
Yeah, of course it's important as we've been talking about to keep eye on the diet. It's so easy to let the diet get out of control. Because people tend towards comfort food when they're not feeling well, but it is very important to keep the diet in check and have plenty of healthy foods, vegetables and healthy meats and fish and all those kind of things, and just not to skimp on the healthy foods is another important aspect.
Definitely food first. We talk about that all the time to our listeners. Get the processed foods out of your diet, get carbs, the processed carbs out of your diet, fast food, inflammatory foods out, focus on vegetables first. We love vegetables to your health. We love vegetables. Mike will send me pictures of his plate, which I love. My garden is maybe not as prolific as I wanted to be, but Mike, I'm going to start sending you pictures of the tomatoes I'm picking right now.
Oh, good. I'll look forward to that. Yeah.
My herb garden is actually really taking off. It seems to be liking all this heat and humidity. So I have some fabulous parsley and verbena that's growing. My basil is out of control. So I have some good problems right now in my herbal garden. So Dr. Zioli, tell our listeners how they can reach you, how they can make an appointment, or how they can read some of your information.
Yeah.
Yes. Need to, come and see you.
Yeah. I work at Phytos Clinic, PHYDOS. We have a website. We have I'm here every day. We have a receptionist answering the phone. I give our phone number if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Our phone number is 434-244-2992. Our website is phytosclinic.com. And I have a Facebook page. It's easy to get in touch with me. You can send a message or email or give us a call.
Great. Any final remarks, Dr. Zioli, before we let you go so you can get back to your patients?
I think one other thing, if I want to mention one more thing, is just taking a vitamin. It's important to keep the vitamin D up and take a vitamin C supplement or a multivitamin. And that's the last piece of the picture for staying healthy today, is just making sure the vitamins are optimized.
Great.
And a high quality, right? So that would, would ask you what, I'm sure you have certain lists of the highest quality sups.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's important.
Excellent.
To get the right stuff.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Zioli. Wealth of information as always. So you've been listening to Your Health, Zioli here from the Phytos Clinic. Amazing information about digestive health and about health in general, and some great tips on how to stay healthy in times of stress, and especially during COVID.
Yeah. And just to straighten it out, Phytos is PHYDOS Clinic, phytosclinic.com, 244-2992. That was great.
Yep.
Yeah. So the stomach acid was, I thought, was really interesting. You know, most people think about their stomach acid being too high and, oh, I want to lower, I've got the, and they could actually have low stomach acid and still get GERD.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Yep. It's really interesting, actually, that, and I would say in my practice, probably well over half of the patients with indigestion and digestive issues have low stomach acid. So, it's really important to decipher that. And unfortunately, in traditional medicine, again, a pill for an ill, they just, they're not even investigated properly. And the gastroenterologists don't even entertain the possibility that the symptoms are linked to low stomach acid. And they will often completely disregard or mock that question or comment by the patient, and they're put on antacid medications and inappropriately in a lot of cases, and they do more harm long-term wise. So that's something that I've seen a lot, and it's really unfortunate. I have not found a gastroenterologist in this area that I can truly collaborate with and have an actual collaborative discussion about how to manage complicated digestive patients. They dismiss a lot of what we do, and it's really unfortunate.
Yeah, unfortunately, there are a number of doctors out there. I had one tell me, gosh, I guess about 8 or 9 years ago, we're starting to think that diet has something to do with your health. Really?
Yeah, they're just getting on board now.
It's like everything. That's all it has. It's just everything.
Gosh, right? Exactly. Well, Dr. Zioli, if you need to get going.
Yeah, okay. Excellent. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. Our pleasure.
Thank
for
you.
Sure.
Okay.
All right.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye, doctor.
Bye, Mike.
Well, Melanie, that interview with Dr. Zioli was really informative.
It was very informative, actually. We learned quite a bit about digestive health and things that can be done to support digestive health, but also we talked quite a bit about stomach acid and the impact on overall health and how really it's not well understood from a lot of people, and how you can have low stomach acid that can really negatively impact your health. So I learned some for sure. I know you learned some, but I know our listeners learned a lot from our conversation with Dr. Zioli, who's a great resource for us here in town in Charlottesville.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. You know, I saw a documentary recently called The Gut, and it showed where the gut actually is a second brain. It has some similar cells and structure that our brain and the head have. And, of course, it's directly connected to the brain via the vagus nerve.
That is correct.
Yeah, and they talk back and forth. It's amazing.
Yeah, we call it a direct highway, communication highway between the gut and our digestive tract and our brain. We call that the gut-brain axis. And it's something that's actually started to be pretty heavily studied. So if you do an online search, you can use PubMed, which is the biggest online world platform for published studies. Or you can also use Google Scholar that looks at publications, scientific publications, and you put in gut-brain axis as in like AXIS, so an axis.
Oh, right, like the axis of the earth, right, I gotcha.
The axis, yeah. So the gut-brain axis is something that is starting to be better understood and starting to be pretty heavily studied because of its connection to all sorts of different health issues and health concerns. And we're starting to see so much data on this, and it's really fascinating. And the vagus nerve is the main nerve that we know of right now. And I know we're going to keep learning and learning about this, but the vagus nerve is that main communication highway between the gut and our brain. So they are connected. They are very tightly connected.
It was amazing, Melanie, because they talked about how some of the same lesions that occur in the brain during Parkinson's occur in the gut 20 to 25 years earlier.
And
so obviously they're saying, wow, well, if we study the gut, we notice these lesions coming on, maybe we can do something to mitigate this before it attacks the brain.
Yep, absolutely. And this is something we talk about in functional naturopathic and integrative medicine, is that if you look with the right lens and you look at the right things, you can see a disease process start years before it's actually a full-blown disease. And I often use diabetes as an example, because you don't suddenly wake up and you go to your annual physical and suddenly have elevated blood sugars. Diabetes, type 2 diabetes, is a process that develops over years, literally from the onset of starting to have blood sugar issues. It's really insulin resistance that starts it. It can take 10, 15 years to develop full-blown type 2 diabetes. So it's very similar for neurodegenerative diseases. We have some interesting tools that we can use to see if there's lesions in the brain and the nervous system or elsewhere, markers elsewhere, that we can see that hint if there's a disease process that may be starting, that potentially, if nothing changes in 10, 15, 20 years, mm-hmm. you may have XYZ conditions such as Parkinson's, dementia, Alzheimer's. So if you have the right lens as a healthcare provider, you can potentially, if you get the training that's appropriate for that, I tell my patients, it's all about the lens. You know, one healthcare provider will look at the same labs and see different things because of their training, their background, and also what they're trained to do. Are they trained to diagnose and manage disease, or are they trained to prevent disease? And that's where someone who does functional and integrative medicine, we are trained to prevent and reverse disease. So we're very motivated to catch it early, or to catch it before it's even a disease.
Well, I like that. Yeah.
When it comes to the gut-brain axis, we know there's a connection that's been known in my world of medicine for years. Mm-hmm. But we also know that people who suffer from digestive illnesses, such as, for example, the worst ones, Crohn's, colitis, so the inflammatory bowel diseases, people who have those conditions have much higher rates of mood issues and mood concerns, anxiety and depression, so often overlooked as an area of support for people who have mood issues or mood concerns. It's something that every healthcare provider can have a really significant impact on.
You're listening to Your Health. Mel and I are adding a companion piece to Dr. David Zioli and digestive health.
Diet first, diet and lifestyle. Change your diet. Give the microbiome or the gut bacteria, the good gut bacteria, give them what they need so they can thrive. And often mood changes in patients. It is fascinating to see that. I've seen this for years now in my patients. Patients who come in who have the gut-brain axis is disrupted because they have a digestive concern, a digestive illness. They just have digestive issues, gut issues, stomach issues. You know, there's all these different terms that you can call it. And then we fix that. And then as a parallel event, their mood gets better. And then we're able to decrease the dose of their antidepressant if they were on one, or take them off of their antidepressant successfully, and or just their mood generally improves, their cognition improves. I see this in my older adults. So for all you folks out there who are 55 or 60 and older and want to really keep your brain healthy, please consider your digestive health because of this gut-brain axis. And that's a huge area of emphasis in research right now and in functional and integrative medicine because of the impact, the high impact that it can have. So the long explanation, Mike, but the gut-brain axis is a phenomenal area of discovery right now in medicine and in science. And I mean, Dr. Zioli just highlighted, it was like a brief introduction of all the things that our gut can impact. But then we didn't even go with Dr. Zioli into mood, mind, cognition so much because we didn't have time. It could be a whole weekend interview.
Oh, sure. I can imagine that.
Yes, absolutely.
You are listening to Your Health right here on 97.9 The Wren. I'm talking with my co-host, nurse practitioner Melanie Dorion, and we are talking about digestive health as a companion piece to Dr. Zioli, who you just heard, and the gut-brain axis, because the brain is connected to the gut via the vagus nerve, and they talk to each other with the similar pulses, which react and how the nerves talk.
That's and it's not just electrochemical. There's our neurotransmitters are those chemicals that help, you know, serotonin is one that's probably better known to help us with a better mood. And it, people think about it as it's a brain neurotransmitter. Serotonin, you know, it's for your brain, it's for mood, it's for fighting depression, it's for being happy. Well, most of it is made in your gut, like something above, like well above 70% of the serotonin that is in our body is made in our gut. It's the gut-brain axis is because of that serotonin. So neurotransmitters, those molecules that help us achieve better mood, are often made in our gut. So they travel on this vagus nerve and in our blood. They travel in other places to help with cognition. So it's such an important highway between the brain and the gut. And there's all sorts of molecules that travel between. So it's not just the electricity directly from the nerve. It's all of the other stuff around it that's produced in the gut. Also inflammatory and immune markers, neurotransmitters. The gut produces a ton of stuff.
I guess you could call that the highway of health. And so if the gut is healthy, we're healthy.
Yep, exactly. When your digestive health is happy and is healthy, effectively the whole system, the whole body is more resilient because it can absorb nutrients, use and absorb nutrients better. It can fight infections and inflammation and toxins better. It eliminates, of course, we think of the digestive tract mostly as elimination and having a bowel movement and eliminating toxins and anything else, but it does so much more and it's directly linked. If you have imbalances in your gut microbiome, a small or large intestine, it's been directly linked to liver disease and not like maybe in some weird way, it's directly linked to non-alcoholic fatty liver disease because of the bacteria, non-beneficial bacteria in your gut, what they secrete will directly be inflammatory and irritating to the liver. So if you have fatty liver, you've been told you have fatty liver, which is an epidemic right now worldwide, or you have mood concerns and you have allergies, you have to turn back and really look into your digestive tract, into that gut-brain axis, that gut-liver axis, the gut connection to all sorts of different. So it's a really, really important area that if you want to optimize your health and you're not sure where to start, of course, we talk to Your Health all the time. Clean up your diet. Clean up your diet. Eat local. Eat natural. Make your own food. You know, shop on the outside of the grocery store aisles. Like, don't shop in the middle aisles or as little as possible because that's where all the junk is. And include foods that are good for your microbiome, such as prebiotic, good fiber-rich foods that are not grains, probiotic foods, so some fermented foods. And if you're, again, if you're not sure where to start, clean up your diet and support your digestive health.
And I always say anything that will support your digestive health, very, very important. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Your Health, brought to you by Hamilton's on Downtown Mall and by Rebecca's Natural Foods, where your journey to a healthy life begins. To Your Health is heard every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 on 97.9 The Wren. Mike and Melanie will be right back after these messages.
Support today is coming from Hamilton's at First in Main, celebrating over 20 years of contemporary American fine dining on Charlottesville's historic downtown mall. At Hamilton's, you'll find a seafood, steaks, and vegetarian fare with a full bar and eclectic wine list. Hamilton supports sustainability in food production, transportation, and preparation, and in the community at large. You can see the lunch and dinner menus, make a reservation, or book the private dining space for your function all at hamiltonsrestaurant.com. Support for this station today is from Rebecca's Natural Food in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. During this COVID emergency, you can find out about Rebecca's daily hours, mail order options, and front of store pickup at 977-1965 or at rebeccasnaturalfoods.com. Rebecca stands with the community during this time of social distancing and is there to safely provide the nutritional support you need. That's Rebecca's Natural Food in the Barracks Road Shopping Center at 977-1965 or at RebeccasNaturalFoods.com.
So you mentioned fatty liver. So you get a liver panel. I had one today. I did. Well, I had a whole thing. They did liver, they did kidney functions, they did all that, markers in the blood. But the liver panel, would that measure triglycerides?
So if you do a cholesterol panel, you'll get your triglycerides. But to look at liver health, that you have to come at it from a different perspective, because the liver enzymes that are done on a traditional metabolic panel or just traditional liver panel, I mean, they're important, actually. Of course, you don't want your liver enzymes to be high, but you want to look at it or have someone who looks at it with a lens that's preventing disease, because the liver is hugely resilient. Very resilient. So if your liver enzymes are elevated, I tell people this all the time, if your liver enzymes are elevated, you are in trouble, because the liver is very resilient. So if the liver enzymes are elevated, something is really irritating your system.
And so what you're saying, Mel, if I'm correct in this, if we're eating the right foods, chances are our enzymes are going to be right in that normal level.
You want them at the lower end of the normal level.
Lower end of the normal level.
Even if they're considered normal, but they're at the top end of constantly at the higher end of the normal range, it's worth considering that possibly something is irritating, because there's normal ranges and there's optimal ranges. And optimal is what we look at when we consider optimal health. That's what we look at in functional and integrative medicine. We want optimal levels of things. We want our patients to feel their best. We want the bodies to function at their best. So when you look at results, and I just went through this again this week with a patient, she comes to me, she's exhausted, and this high-performing, working mom, athlete, she's been dragging for months. She's like, my labs, I've been told all my labs are normal. I hear this all the time. And I looked at her labs. I'm like, no, because my lens is different. They were correct in many ways. Her provider, that a lot of things were normal. And the things that were abnormal, she was told, oh, well, it's just borderline abnormal. I'm like, well, it's, for me, it's way off, because you're now a little bit out of the normal range, but you are way off the optimal range. So that's what I looked at, and that's what she and I discussed. And it was really helpful for her to hear that, because she felt heard suddenly, because I told her, listen, your labs are not optimal and these are not normal. And this is consistent with what you're describing in terms of your concerns, your health concerns. So we have to look at, we have to consider optimal range. That's something that a traditional or regular healthcare provider is trained to do. So that's important to remember. If you've been told, for our listeners, if you've been told your labs are normal, but you don't feel good, go see someone else. Get a second opinion. Come and see us at Be Vital or talk to another healthcare provider, because you need someone who's going to have a different lens and who's going to look at this from a different angle and just be able to assess, are you within optimal range or not? And that's a big part of what we do, is to make sure that we get our patients into optimal ranges. Same thing with digestive health. We want to look, and we do a lot of advanced testing for digestive health. We use all these amazing functional testing to look at what your microbiome is doing, how it's acting, and how are those bugs interacting with the rest of your body, the bugs in your digestive tract. And we look for any imbalances, signs of suboptimal stomach acid, like we talked with Dr. Zioli. If your enzymes aren't optimal, if the good bugs in your gut, because they make things for us, just FYI to our listeners, the bacteria in our digestive tract, they make things such as a type of fat called short-chain fatty acids that we use, humans. We cannot make our own short-chain fatty acids, so it needs to come from the diet or come from a healthy bacteria in our gut to help. And that the short-chain fatty acids fuel our brains and our nervous systems. Our bodies really like them. So if those bugs, the bacteria in our gut, the microbiome, if that's not healthy or happy, then we're not getting optimal levels of short-chain fatty acids. So that's one example of things that the bacteria in our microbiome make for us. And it's important to keep those healthy. So when it comes to circling back to testing, we always want to look at levels that are optimal. I don't ever want to see, oh, you just have a little bit of inflammation. Oh, you just have a little bit of XYZ, or this is just a little bit off. That's never normal in my practice with my patients. So if you want someone to thrive and really be healthy, then we got to look at optimal ranges.
What are some of the foods that are associated with short-chain fatty acids?
The microbiome in our digestive tract, they make short-chain fatty acids.
Okay.
So they make it from their internal molecular processes, but they will make the short-chain fatty acids when good sources of fiber, non-grain sources of fiber, when the right prebiotic, so pre and probiotic, pre as in something that comes before, so P-R-E, prebiotic, those are fibers, the fiber and from non-grain. I know grains are always promoted as the best source of fiber. Well, based on hundreds and hundreds of tests to our listeners, grains are not the best source of fiber for the microbiome. I do a lot of microbiome testing in my practice, and the healthiest microbiome profiles that I've seen are from people who focus their fiber on non-grain sources from vegetables, nuts, and seeds. That's what seems to feed and fuel our microbiome. And then they make short-chain fatty acids in a way that our bodies can really benefit from them.
Coconut oil is a medium chain.
Correct.
And so that's good. Well, I do chia seeds and then yogurt. So I get my pre and my pro at the same time.
Yep, exactly. Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's something people can do. You've got the fruits and veggies, legumes. Those would be, would those be short?
So we don't make short chain fatty acids.
Oh, okay.
So, so it's made from the microbiome. Make that for us. So they're derived from the intestinal microbiome. When they ferment fiber, they make short-chain fatty acids.
So that's why fermented foods are good to eat.
Well, you're not going to, fermented foods give you probiotics. They give you more of the good bacteria, which then add to your microbiome health. And then they help with the immune system, they help with leaky gut, they make short-chain fatty acids. So a probiotic food, a fermented food, gives you good bugs. And I mean, there's other nutrients in there, but really a fermented food is a food that really feeds your microbiome because of the probiotics in there. And then again, the prebiotics, pre as in before, are the fiber. They make a variety of things, but especially important, the short chain fatty acids that are very helpful for humans. We make butyrate when we fast. So that's not completely accurate that we don't make them. So the one in the digestive tract that's made in the digestive tract is made from the bacteria in our gut. And that is used by our bodies for a variety of things, especially to support the brain and the nervous system.
Mm-hmm. Fruits and vegetables encourage the body to make short-chain fatty acids.
especially vegetables, fruit don't have very much fiber. Fruit are not a good source of fiber. Fruit are a good source of vitamins and antioxidants, but they're not a good source of fiber in general. The fibrous vegetables and then resistant starch coming from, for example, potatoes that have been cooked and then cooled. The process of cooling changes some of the molecules in the potato and changes the structure of the molecule to make it a starch or a fiber in a way that's now a resistant starch, which feeds the microbiome. That is one good source of prebiotic. Leeks, for example, a great source. They're super tasty, but also they have the right types of fiber that feed the microbiome. So it becomes a prebiotic food. Oh. So fiber-rich foods are really good for prebiotic health and for feeding the microbiome in our gut.
Now that's interesting because when I was in catering and we would make things like potato salad or potato, even potato leek soup, we would cook the potatoes, but then we cooled them. And when I say cooled, they actually spent the night in the refrigerator. And the soup was made the next day, or the potato salad was made the next day. But that was after spending a night in the refrigerator, getting down to 34 degrees. So there's a method to that. Yeah, no wonder that's what the recipe called for.
Yeah, without knowing it, in a way, a lot of our old school recipes, like when you think about chicken soup, well, chicken soup used to be bone broth from chicken bones.
Right.
That's why it helped when you were sick, because it feeds the microbiome, people. That's why chicken soup. Don't get chicken soup from a can right now and think you're gonna help your health. No, that's not what it is. Chicken soup, why we keep recommending that is that actually it's chicken bone broth. And that's how it used to be made. And then it used to be cooked with garlic, onions, and carrots and celery, all things that are rich in nutrients to soothe a digestive tract and give you electrolytes, which is what you need when you're sick. You feed a microbiome.
And the one thing that I found out about making chicken soup, and it's the right way to do it, is you always start off with cold water. Even if you have to put ice in the water, make sure the water is ice cold, because the bones of the chicken, we used to crack the bones so we get to make sure it got the marrow, you know, but you don't have to, because the bones are porous. And if you start off with ice cold water, once it gets hot, that water will just flow right through the bones. It'll pull all that goodness right out of the marrow. So start with ice cold water. And you'll get that really good flow through.
That's a great tip. Awesome. Making bone broth is great. Make a big batch in your crock pot. And you're saying to start with ice cold water, right?
Yep, always. And then that bone will just open right up and it'll just flow back and forth. It's absolutely great. And I experimented with it. I took, real hot water, put the bones in. I would, at the end, I'd pull the bones off and crack them. And the marrow was pretty much intact. But when I started with ice cold water and I cracked the bones out later, there was no marrow. They were hollow. So all that marrow went into the soup.
Walk us through this, because I think this is a great tip, especially speaking of the gut brain axis and how to support your gut. Another great tip is, maybe not at this time of the year when it's 90 degrees outside, but drinking on a regular basis bone broth, and you seem to have a lot of experience. I've been making my bone broth for years, but I did not know this tip. So for our listeners here, bone broth, old school chicken soup, if you make your bone broth with chicken bones, will feed your microbiome. And that directly supports brain health, your cognition, your memory, and your mood. But here are our in-house expert will walk us through how to make an amazing bone broth. So repeat that to our listeners, because I did not know that tip.
Well, basically, you just want to start off with ice cold water. If the water pipes in your neighborhood, as mine are, they didn't take the time to drop them down 4 feet. But of course, there's a lot of rock and stone. It's kind of hard to get them down that. They're very expensive. So they're right near the surface, meaning if we have a 90-degree day, well, we've got 85 degree cold water, which isn't exactly cold. So get it from your cold water tap. If you've got well water, it's perfectly fine. You're already at the right degree. But if you have to, throw a little ice in there, get it down below 60 is your optimum. Down below 60 degrees to start with. And then what'll happen is as it heats up, the pores in the bones will open up and the water will just flow through them. And also, if you have potatoes, cook them the day before and then put them in the refrigerator and add them to the soup when the soup is hot. You can add them at the last minute, actually. If you don't want your potatoes being, you know, mushy mush, just wait and at the last minute, dump your potatoes in and serve. Because those potatoes, if the soup's hot, the potatoes will get warm really fast.
Yeah, got it. Okay, this is a great tip. And that gives you an amazing soup based on bone broth plus resistant starch from the potatoes that have been cooled and then added back in. Add some leeks in there for a bone broth-based potato leek soup, and you have a powerhouse of a meal to support your microbiome. And now we know, because of the gut-brain axis, supports your health, your brain health, your nervous system health, and your mood. All this on To Your Health, guys. You learned this on To Your Health.
That's why you listen to Your Health on 97.9 The Wren. I'm talking with my co-host, nurse practitioner, Melanie Dorian, who is an expert in integrative and functional medicine. That's what she's all about over there at Be Vital Health. She's also one of our sponsors, which is really cool. And that's nice too. Well, Mel, this has been great. And as always, what can I say? Another good show right here on To Your Health. Stay tuned next week for another good show on To Your Health. See you, Melanie.
Bye. Thank you for a great show, Mike.
You've been listening to Your Health with your hosts, Mike McBee and Melanie Dorian. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall, and by Rebecca's Natural Foods in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. Be listening to 97.9 The Wren next Sunday morning at 8 for To Your Health.